This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where we celebrate this holiday by taking a look at one of the true mysteries in the whole course of human history. The mystery of why it was that colonists in North America in the 1760s and 1770s, colonists who were well-fed and who drank a good deal and were wealthy by the standards of the time, who lived really in some of the happiest circumstances of any people who had ever drawn breath in the history of the planet up to that time, why these privileged colonists were willing to risk everything on what seemed to be fairly picayune points of taxation. We're taking a look at the coming of the American Revolution, why they fought. One of the most important things to remember is that it was not the colonists, not the patriots, not the so-called revolutionaries who initiated the change. As a matter of fact, they were responsible mostly for resisting the change. The huge distance between England and North America meant that there couldn't be day-to-day control by the king or by Parliament of everything that happened in individual colonies. In fact, there couldn't be control by any central authority even in the colonies at that time. Transportation, communication was simply too difficult. So it was inevitable that local authority would spring up. And the local authority had sprung up in North America, and a group of leaders had empowered themselves, had been empowered, and perfectly fine with the authorities in London. Colonial assemblies, the House of Burgesses in Virginia, the State Assembly in Massachusetts, throughout the colonies, these local leaders were controlling events. And all of a sudden, after the French and Indian War, it was the British who were trying to change things. It is always easier to fight, to preserve a life that you love, to preserve a status quo that seems worthwhile, than it is to get people to fight and sacrifice to try to realize some new vision. One of the important things to keep in mind about this whole revolutionary struggle and the long lead up to it was that the people who made the revolution were fighting to keep things as they were. There's a beautiful passage about all of this that sums up the way the situation was before the American Revolution and the events leading to it. It's a passage written by my long-ago professor of colonial history at Yale, Edmund S. Morgan, who's really one of the best writers on this anywhere. And what he writes is, the government of Great Britain hadn't been designed to cover half the globe. And when Englishmen were not busy extending their possessions still farther, they were apt to regard the problem of turnpikes in Yorkshire as vastly more important than the enforcement of the Navigation Acts in New York. Administration of the colonies was left to the king, who turned it over to his Secretary of State for the Southern Department, whose principal business was England's relations with Southern Europe. The secretary left it pretty much to the Board of Trade and Plantations, a sort of chamber of commerce with purely advisory powers. The Board of Trade told the secretary what to do. He told the royal governors. The governors told the colonists. And the colonists did what they pleased. That was the status quo, and it was fine with everybody. The British Empire, writes Professor Morgan, however inefficient its management, was very much a going concern. And wise men on both sides of the Atlantic believed that its success was intimately connected with the bumbling way in which it was run. Freedom, inefficiency, and prosperity are not infrequently found together, and it is seldom easy to distinguish between the first two, freedom and inefficiency. It was this desire to suddenly make the British Empire more efficient that led to all kinds of difficulties. It seemed, for a while at least, that those difficulties might be cleared up a bit when the Stamp Act was repealed. And there was celebration throughout the colonies. It was considered to be an absolutely great and brilliant and wonderful victory for all of the colonists. They had demanded the Stamp Act be removed. One of the reasons that was considered so obnoxious was because it put a special tax on all legal documents. And one of the things about North America at that time was it was a very much the most lawyer-ridden society in the world. And one of the things that British visitors noted whenever they came to the colonies was how busy the courts were. There were constant lawsuits back and forth. And lawyers, especially top lawyers in Boston, like, oh, John Adams, for instance, could make a lot of money. They could make 3,000 to 4,000 pounds a year, which was compared with a top carpenter who would make 90 pounds a year. So you have some idea how well they would do. Meanwhile, a school teacher, 30 pounds a year, about a third as much as a carpenter. So you can see that this underpayment of schoolmasters is not a new thing in America. The president of Yale College got 150 pounds a year, just a bit more than a carpenter. In any event, the celebration of the Stamp Act repeal actually swept all of the colonies. In New York, they put up a statue. Well, it was out of lead, but it was still a statue of George III. Put it right up on Bowling Green and celebrated and danced around it and praised the young king who had seen the Stamp Act repealed. In Boston, people celebrating the repeal carried an enormous transparent pillar that was made out of oiled paper. And they had fires inside it that didn't burn the paper, candles. So it was like a Japanese lantern. And there were 300 lamps inside this huge oiled paper tower. And it was covered with symbolic pictures and patriotic verse, all praising King George and Parliament and declaring how eternally people wanted to be part of the British Empire. The only problem was that Parliament didn't welcome this idea of retreating on the Stamp Act, and particularly the King didn't welcome it, because he was convinced that unless England asserted its authority to tax the colonists, then that authority would be lost forever. And part of what happened is that a new Chancellor of the Exchequer, that's the equivalent of Secretary of the Treasury, was empowered in London, in Parliament. And it was none other than Champagne Charlie, Charles Townshend, the man about town and dandy and drunk who had gotten involved with a very bitter exchange on Parliament with Colonel Isaac Barré, who had ended up coining the phrase Sons of Liberty. In any event, Champagne Charlie decided that the best way to make up for the revenue that England wasn't getting, because the Stamp Act was gone, was to introduce a whole bunch of new taxes on lead, on glass, on paint, on tea, and dozens of other substances. And part of what he was basing this on, the Townshend duties, named after Champagne Charlie himself, was the idea that England had accepted the notion, okay, we don't have the right to tax the Americans internally because they don't vote for Parliament. But we certainly have a right to control their trade, and these are external taxes. They are duties. But they were duties for the purpose of revenue, and they were tremendously, heatedly opposed by colonists everywhere. And part of the reason they opposed them, you can see with one of the other things that Champagne Charlie did, Charles Townshend. He was very eager to be popular in England, so he put through a huge tax cut on the land tax for the English. But now watch. You see, what he did was give a tax break to people who voted for Parliament while putting new tax burdens on people who didn't. This was exactly what the Americans felt tremendously frightened about. The idea that if you can't vote for people, if you don't vote on their future, and they didn't vote, they didn't send members to Parliament, it was simply too far away, then you have absolutely no control. You are a slave. And actually, Professor Pauline Mayer at Massachusetts Institute of Technology makes a very good point. One of the examples that they could use was Ireland. Ireland at the time was terribly oppressed by the English. They didn't want to be in the position of Ireland, to be oppressed by the mother country in this way. The conflict intensified on the road to revolution.
You're listening to a special history broadcast of The Michael Medved Show. For a complete list of history shows, visit medvedhistorystore.com.
Is our country's distinctive power and prosperity the product of some happy accidents or criminal activity, or is it God's hand on America? That's the title, actually, of my most recent book. You can get a hardcover copy, personally signed by me, together with a full audiobook of me reading every single word of, I think, one of the most important books that's out there right now. And it comes to you together with an MP3 player, so you can hear it anytime you want. It's all at a reduced price while supplies last. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for God's Hand on America, look for that audio book and hardcover book bundle. This can be an important tool in combating some of the toxic lies about America. God's Hand on America, Divine Providence in the Modern Era at michaelmedved.com or medvedhistorystore.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow, here to tell you about my Giza Dream bed sheets. I made sure that they would be everything you'd ever want in a sheet set. I started with the world's finest cotton called Giza. It's only grown in a region where the Sahara Desert, the Nile River, and the Mediterranean Sea all meet. The long staple cotton makes my Giza Dream sheets ultra soft and durable. They come with extra wide pillowcases to fit over any pillow and extra deep pockets to fit over any mattress. Not only that, they come with my 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. I personally guarantee that they'll be the most comfortable sheets you'll ever own.
That's two for one low price, plus free shipping. Call 800-320-6280 or MyPillow.com, promo code MEDVET. That's 800-320-6280. Use the promo code MEDVET for these great radio specials.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
The way things are going these days, do you ever ask yourself, when is the other shoe going to drop? The warning signs are everywhere. The next big danger is food shortages. That's why Americans are learning to be self-reliant and getting their emergency long-term food storage from My Patriot Supply. We're America's trusted leader in emergency preparedness. Over the past decade, My Patriot Supply has served millions of families and helped them prepare. Our delicious meal kits average 2,000 calories per day and stay fresh in storage up to 25 years. This is reliable food that will be there when disasters strike. And with the way things are going, you should grab some now. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com, order a starter kit for each member of your family, and we'll ship everything quickly and discreetly to your door. Don't wait and scramble with the masses when the news breaks. Instead, prepare today for what's coming. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
No, it is not easy to explain the motivations of the people who made the American Revolution, who fought our long, painful, terribly bloody war for independence. When we talk about tyranny in the 20th century, Obviously, what we have in mind is some of these most monstrous nightmare regimes in the history of human beings. Regimes like communist Russia or Nazi Germany. England in the Revolution, despite what the movie The Patriot might suggest, wasn't at all like that. In fact, England in many ways remained by far the most enlightened, the most honest, the most just of all major powers in the world. The problem for the Americans was they just felt they were better. And they were right. If you take a look at some of the response of the American colonists to the duties, to the taxes that the English tried to put on them, you can't understand that response unless you realize that circumstances were completely different in the colonies than they were back home in England. In England, very few people owned property. Only the elite owned property. In fact, property qualifications were so restrictive that in 1760, only 219,000 Englishmen had the right to vote out of some 8 million. That's a tiny percentage. 1 in 40 people who lived in England had the right to vote. In America, it was very different. I mean, we look today at the situation in colonial America and say, well, how could it be? They only allowed property owners the ability to vote. But the truth of the matter is that most people owned enough property to qualify to vote. In fact, some people suggest that as many as 70% of colonists owned enough property so that they had the franchise, that they were able to vote. Now, of course, that did not include, left out of all of that, is the 20% of the North American colonies that was black. I mean, there were a great many slaves. The percentage of black people living in America at the time was higher than the percentage of black people living in America today. And by the way, some of those black people, about 20% of that 20%, were freed Negroes who were artisans, who participated in the economy, and some of whom owned slaves themselves. But that is another story. The truth of the matter is that they had built a society in nearly all of the colonies that was very different from any other society in the history of the world. First of all, there were only two towns that were over 20,000 people in all of North America. One of them was Philadelphia, which was the metropolis of the entire continent. With about 45,000 population, it was the second biggest city, English-speaking city, after London. And then there was Boston, which had, during this period, between 18 and 22,000 people. It was basically a small town. But 95% of all Americans lived on farms or in very remote communities, in communities less than 2,500 population. So you're not talking about a lot of townspeople. What you are talking about is wealth being dispersed widely enough so that 40% of the people were independent farmers who lived in considerable comfort. A typical northern farmer owned 10 head of cattle, 16 sheep, 6 pigs, 2 horses, and a team of oxen. And he was usually able to sell 40% of the crops that he grew for cash. Now, that was a pretty good life, particularly compared to the way that other people lived at that time. There was a visitor to North America from Sweden, about 1750, who reported, quote, "Every countryman, even the poorest peasant, has an orchard with apples, peaches, chestnuts, walnuts, cherries, quinces, and such fruits, and sometimes we saw vines climbing in them. The valleys were frequently blessed with little brooks of crystalline water. The fields by the side of the road were almost all mown." What was amazing was that though the North American colonies had a population of only 2.6 million, including the 20% who were slaves, and England had a population of 8 million, North America produced economically almost half as much as England. And in fact, people who looked at it and looked at the industry and the productivity and the amazing success of the American economy actually predicted that before long, perhaps as soon as 1800, those American colonies would be outproducing the mother country. That was part of the reason that people like Chancellor of the Exchequer, Champagne Charlie Townsend, Charles Townsend, seemed to have actual resentment to the Americans. They were privileged. They were doing well. And how well were they doing? Well, one of the things that absolutely has gotten my attention is the amount of meat they consumed. In 1784, now that's after the Revolution, but the statistics would basically apply before the Revolution, too. One farm family of four in Watley, Massachusetts, ate 500 pounds of pork and 200 pounds of beef, which comes out to roughly a half a pound of meat a day per person. That was typical, not exceptional. Henry Adams, writing about the colonists, talked about the desire to eat pork three times a day. It was considered an essential part of the American diet, nearly as important as drinking hard cider and rum. President Washington, at his home in Mount Vernon, usually served fish, fowl, and a roast at every dinner. And a good tavern meal would consist of two roasts or two kinds of fowl or all of the above at every meal. Now, the result of all of this was, well, it was a high-protein diet. And because of that protein-rich diet, American men of the 1700s were, according to army records, about as tall as they are today, an average of a little bit over 5'8", which made them 2 to 3 inches taller than their counterparts back in England. With all of that, there was a great deal of confidence, a great deal of a sense of, yes, we can do it, when it came to resisting the latest attempt of the English to squeeze money out of the colonists. What was so obnoxious about the Townshend Acts was not simply the amount of money they were trying to take, but the way they were trying to take it. The main thing that the colonists objected to was not the money itself. It was the idea that somebody who was found guilty of avoiding these duties on glass, on lead, on painter's colors, on paint, paper, and tea, somebody was accused of that, wouldn't be tried in front of a jury. He'd be tried in front of an admiralty court, where he would have very little chance of getting acquitted. Provision alone made them angry, but in addition to that, the Townshend Acts set up boards of customs commissioners under direct British control, which allowed searches by customs officials in homes, as well as on ships and in stores and in offices. And most objectionable of all, what this all set up was a situation whereby, from now on, the governors and the judges and the local officials would not be paid by colonial assemblies. They would be paid through the collection of these duties. In other words, England was taking over local administration. This was intolerable. A number of leaders sprang forward to argue against it, to organize resistance, to make the British merchant class pay, to try to get the Townshend duties repealed, just as they had with the Stamp Act. Their success was more than could be imagined.
You're listening to a special history broadcast of The Michael Medved Show. For more history programs, go to MedvedHistoryStore.com or become a Medhead at MichaelMedved.com and check out our new history podcast for premium members called In Light of History.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com. Keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Americans are heading home after the holiday weekend with AAA and the TSA reporting pandemic highs in road and air travel. Life is getting back to normal despite prices and airline delays across the country. Officials believe the busiest time for travel, whether on the roads or whether in the air, will be between 6 p.m. tonight and midnight. Jeanette McGee is with AAA. She says people are continuing to travel even as gas prices continue to rise.
Yes, gas prices are more expensive, but Americans are not really taking that into account for their trip.
Search and rescue crews in Surfside, Florida have the green light to get back to work in the rubble of the condo tower that collapsed. Authorities demolished the portion of the building that was left standing last night. At least 27 people are dead and 118 still unaccounted for. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Tehebo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build the red corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A, .com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.
If you are trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252.
Why they fought, we're taking a look at the events and the decisions that led up step by step to the American Revolution and to the War for Independence. And part of what needs to be understood is that our forefathers in the North American colonies were different from their English cousins, partially because they so clearly understood the value of money. Now, the English also understood money. I mean, remember, Napoleon once supposedly referred to England as a nation of shopkeepers and meant that very derisively. But in America, it was different. Because in England, you could be a very popular person, you could have a lot of prestige if you had the right background, the right family background, if you had the right noble title. It didn't matter if you were deeply in debt. In fact, Parliament and the government was full of all kinds of aristocratic sots who had squandered family fortunes and had no money. But America was all about money. You could come to America, like George Washington's family did about 100 years before this time, and not have a lot of money and earn some and become a leading family. Everything was based upon money. It was a much more open society. And as a result, people spoke about money far more openly. There was considered to be nothing disgraceful about understanding the value of money. What's interesting is when you look at newspaper accounts of weddings, and this really absolutely knocked me out. There is one Elizabeth Stith of Virginia, for instance, who is a bride, who was described as, quote, a very amiable lady with a fortune of £1,000. That's what the wedding announcement stipulated. Can you imagine someone doing that today? These folks were not embarrassed to talk about money as a motivation for people and as a reflection of their hard work. March 15th, 1771, the Virginia Gazette announced, yesterday was married in Henrico, Mr. William Carter, third son of Mr. John Carter, age 23, to Mrs. Sarah Ellison, relict, that means widow, of Mr. Gerald Ellison, aged 85, a sprightly old tit with 3,000 pounds fortune. Yeah, there's pretty clear motivation there. Money mattered. And that's why, because of the recognition of money representing what people worked hard for, what they saved for, what they built for, and representing a family's future, that the attack on the taxing power by the British Parliament, not by the king so much, because the king was behind the scenes. He was a figurehead largely. Yes, he was involved in events, and he could have shaped events one way or another. But it was the parliamentary leadership, corrupt and careless, that pushed forward this arrogant policy that was absolutely designed to bring the American colonists to heel and to squeeze them for money. And they resented it. And the opposition to the Townshend Acts, with its house-to-house searches if necessary, its abrogation of what people consider to be their most essential rights, the rights to trial by jury, for instance, that opposition became extremely intense. Partially because, with the Stamp Act crisis a couple of years before, the Americans had seen that they could win if they stuck together, if they were strong enough in their opposition. They were confident that they could get Parliament to withdraw these obnoxious acts. Some of the leaders, the intellectual leaders of the opposition, James Otis, a brilliant but eccentric lawyer in Boston, he was credited with originating the phrase, "Taxation without representation is tyranny." That was the essence of the colonial cause. And then there was a guy, John Dickinson, in Pennsylvania, who was a very top lawyer, very wealthy, and he had actually been trained as a lawyer in England. And he came back, and he wrote a series of letters that were actually newspaper columns called Letters from a Pennsylvania Farmer. Now, he was no Pennsylvania farmer. He wasn't a simple guy. He was one of the slickest, most powerful lawyers in the colonies. But all of these documents argued passionately about the need to respect liberty and independence, the ability of people to vote for their own representatives, who alone would have the power to tax them and to take their property, to take their money, which meant everything. Because property, especially property that you owned, real property, was the essence of dignity in colonial America. Part of what happened here is the resistance was so strong that the governor of Massachusetts called for British troops. There were troops on the frontier up to this point, but now he needed troops in Boston, he felt, to protect him against mob activity in the spirit of resistance. And those troops led to a bloody confrontation that just a few years later would end up bringing about the revolution. We'll talk about the Boston Massacre coming back. This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. In a revealing letter to the Ethicist column in the New York Times Magazine, a Bay Area renter asked for moral guidance on handling his landlord. He described the man as a nice guy providing a below-market rental, but the correspondent felt uncomfortable when he saw a Christian magazine in his landlord's mail with cover stories that suggest LGBTQ rights are undermining religious freedom and others about the dangers of educating children about gender diversity. End quote. While acknowledging that destroying his landlord's mail would violate the law, the perplexed tenant asked, is it more ethical to give him this magazine and perpetuate hate and inequality, or to occasionally just lose this piece of mail once a month? This inquiry shows the less powerful urge to censor what neighbors read or think. It also displays the breathtaking arrogance and intolerance that lead more and more Americans to fear and resent the strident left with its toxic role in the culture. I'm Michael Medved. When you look at the long process of misunderstanding and disagreement and irrepressible conflict that led up to the American Revolution, you can see arguments on both sides, can't you? From the British side, there was the sense that, after all, these American colonists have benefited from their association with the mother country. We started these colonies. We protected them in the French and Indian War. We won the war. Now they should pay. And they must obey the law, like everyone else in the British Empire. People in the colonies, particularly the obstreperous colony of Massachusetts, were refusing to obey the law. So naturally, the Friends of Government, as British sympathizers were called, would go ahead and call for redcoats, for troops, for stationing troops right in Boston, and for an obnoxious piece of work called the Quartering Act, which would force Massachusetts families to take these redcoats into their own homes. Meanwhile, you could understand the American point of view as well, because here was a sense where we had a functioning colonial assembly, we fought hard in this war alongside the British, the French and Indian War, and now we are being told we have no say, and our elected representatives have no say, in terms of tax policy. They're taxing us from London, they're collecting the taxes, and they're paying not just the army troops who are among us, but the judges and the magistrates and the governors and the customs commissioners and the other officials. We have no control over any of these people. No wonder that Americans worried about what they called a future of slavery. All of this was really brought to a head in the city of Boston by the arrival of about 600 actually, of His Majesty's troops. These troops were not popular. They did nothing to make themselves popular. They were rough, low-life type folks. They made a habit of offending the Puritan sensibilities of Boston because every Sunday, the Blessed Sabbath in the colony of Massachusetts, they would use Sunday for band practice and for drilling during religious meetings, marching up and down and shouting outside, just basically to annoy people. They also were noted for their rude and aggressive behavior with some of the maidens of the town, and general drunkenness, chasing after women, and worst of all, competing with loyal Bostonians for jobs. Why? Because the pay of British soldiers was so pathetic that it was just taken as a given that those soldiers, who didn't have that much to do, just being basically stationed in Boston to try to intimidate people, they had time for doing odd jobs.
You're listening to a special history broadcast of The Michael Medved Show. For a complete list of history shows, visit MedvedHistoryStore.com.
Even for Americans who've been successful in dodging the coronavirus so far, there's still a problem of pain. There are 100 million Americans who suffer from ongoing pain due to overexertion or exercise or just aging or the effects of everyday living, and Relief Factor can help. It helps exercise-related pain or general muscle aches and pains, and it certainly does for me. There are four key ingredients. Each one approaches the body's natural anti-inflammatory response function from different metabolic pathways. The 3-week quick start can show you how it works. It's just $19.95, 95 cents a day, less than a cup of coffee a day, much less for pain relief. Try Relief Factor. It has worked wonderfully for literally hundreds of thousands, and certainly for me. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, and order your own quick start. Nothing to lose but your pain, the whole world to gain. Don't you get tired of commercials screaming at you to buy gold right now with inflated promises on future values? In an unregulated industry, you need honest, real experts to give you solid advice to protect your wealth and give you top picks, too, on the best coins and bullion based on real-time data and historical trends. For example, as environmental policy becomes a hot topic, one precious metal that's been significantly undervalued for years is potentially set to surge. Nick Rovich, owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion, has long recommended this precious metal. Up to 600,000 ounces of this rare metal will be needed by 2030 to produce green hydrogen. Nick is doubling down on this pick, and you should too. Call Nick to find out more. Now, I've been friends with Nick for several years, and he's my go-to guy when it comes to coins and bullion. I trust him. You can too. Call Nick at 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com. 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
We have all seen and perhaps used the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you ever noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? With bacteria and virus problems, sanitizers and hand washing are the first line of defense against infectious disease. GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements as set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration as a first aid antiseptic. When it comes to sanitizers, it only makes sense that it lasts till the next application and doesn't dry and crack your skin, inviting infection. For long-lasting alcohol-free sanitizing, come to GCNteam.com keyword antibacterial. That's GCNteam.com, antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203. 877-878-4203.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses. Your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano-colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Order this show or other history shows, go to MedvedHistoryStore.com.
So there was a place in the city, what was called a rope line, where people would normally come to hire folks, and very often the redcoats would come in full uniform, and they would undercut, they would offer their work for a lower price than the local colonists required. On Friday, the 2nd of March, 1770, with Boston in the grip of all of this controversy concerning the Townshend Acts and the Quartering Act, a group of British soldiers from the 29th Regiment went to the rope walk to try to get some of this part-time work. And one of the workers at the rope walk spoke to one of those soldiers, whose name was Private Patrick Walker, that if he wanted work, you can go and clean my, and he used the term S house, but he didn't say it politely. The soldier lost his temper, not wanting to clean out anybody's S house. So he dashed forward and was about to engage in a fight, and he was knocked down. Now soon, where this brawl is going on, 8 or 9 other soldiers of his regiment showed up, and they started wielding clubs and challenged the workers to come out and fight them. The workers, who greatly outnumbered them, rushed out, and the workers chased the soldiers off. But this caused seething resentment, which exploded 3 evenings later. Now, this is March. It's Boston. There's thick snow underfoot that just had a winter storm. And what happened was there was another fight between redcoats and gangs of young men of the town. And that was stopped by the officers of the regiment. But after a fire bell had been rung, lots of people turned out into the streets. It's the middle of the night, a fire bell had been rung, there's fighting going on and brawling going on. All of a sudden, there's a big mob. 100 people? Maybe more. And many of the people in that mob had planks that they had taken from a demolished butcher's stall. And they had clubs and bats that they had been using for playing the game of tip-tat, which was sort of an ancestor of the game of baseball. Meanwhile, there are more fire bells. Fire engines were being pushed along the streets, not because there was any fire, but because there was all this excitement. Scores of apprentices were running through the snow, shouting threats at the British soldiers, lousy rascals, the scoundrel lobster's sons of... dot, dot, dot. They came up to the Custom House, which was, of course, the most hated symbol of British authority. And at the Custom House, there was a lone sentry standing guard in his box. It's cold night. There's snow everywhere. And the crowd gathered and started throwing snowballs, icicles, and lumps of ice from frozen gutters at this one sentry. The sentry fixed his bayonet, put the blade on top of his musket, and then loaded his musket, striking the butt threateningly on the ground. And the crowd said, "Fire! Damn you! Fire! Fire and be damned! You coward!" Meanwhile, a detachment of soldiers, their bayonets fixed, marched at double time through the streets in the moonlight to try to relieve this poor sentry, having heard that he was in trouble. They were under command of a sensible 40-year-old Irishman named Captain Thomas Preston. Preston ordered his men to load their muskets, but having done so, they just stood there, while the Boston youths, with sticks in their hands, continued to shout insults and continued to throw things. And meanwhile, what happened was eventually the firing began. There was no order by Captain Preston to fire, but still, five people were killed, three of them immediately, others wounded, two of them died of their wounds. A sailor from Salem later recalled, "Immediately after the principal firing, I saw three of the people fall down in the street. Presently, after the last gun was fired off, the officer who commanded the rascals sprung before them, waving his sword or stick, and said, 'Damn ye rascals, what did you fire for?' And he struck up one of the guns. Nevertheless, the soldiers were arrested and faced trial for murder." Tell you what happened coming back. This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. New research in the health sciences indicates that making a point of regularly expressing gratitude can bring numerous benefits in physical and emotional health. Robert Emmon, psychology professor at University of California, Davis, declares that gratitude enhances performance in every domain that's been examined: psychological, relational, emotional, physical. Asking research subjects to regularly write down reasons for thankfulness in a daily gratitude journal appears to bring immediate results. A study at University College London showed better sleep quality and lower blood pressure after just 2 weeks of keeping gratitude journals. With a nation painfully afflicted by an epidemic of deaths of despair involving suicides, drug overdoses, and alcoholism, thankfulness may provide a promising antidote, offering an alternative to our current culture of complaint, competitive victimization, and indulgent self-pity. Taking time for thankfulness instead of indulging anger and indignation may be good for your health and the nation's. I'm Michael Medved. The Boston Massacre, March 5th, 1770. The bloodiest day leading up to the American Revolution. Bloody with five people killed. One of them, the most famous of them, Crispus Attucks, was black. He was a runaway slave from Framingham, Massachusetts. He was part Natick Indian. He had worked as a sailor for 20 years. He was leading the attack on the British soldiers in front of the customs house. With clubs and staves, he lay dead. And all of the people who were killed by the British became martyrs to the colonial cause. There was a famous engraving by Paul Revere, silversmith in the city of Boston, that showed the British firing without provocation. Of course, they had a great deal of provocation. And it turned out that they needed a lawyer, a local lawyer, to defend them. And they got the best. They got the best lawyer, arguably, in the entire colony of Massachusetts. His name was John Adams. Yeah, that John Adams. And he worked together with Josiah Quincy, and they ended up getting acquittals, getting all of the seven soldiers and their commander acquitted on charges of murder. Two of the soldiers were convicted of manslaughter charges. The result of the manslaughter charges was they had a brand on their thumb with the letter M on it, and then they were returned to their regiments. So there was justice for the soldiers of the Boston Massacre, but it didn't prevent this entire episode from greatly inflaming colonial opinion. The Paul Revere engraving circulated everywhere, another famous engraving showing the five coffins. And in fact, in Massachusetts, for some 50 years after the Boston Massacre, that day, March 5th, was observed as a solemn day, as something of a patriot holiday. John Adams actually lost a good deal of his local popularity to his much more radical cousin, Sam, a manipulator and a penniless failure at everything, except a great success in shaping colonial opinion. Sam Adams had the idea that independence was necessary. He had that idea in advance of nearly everybody else in North America, and he worked toward that goal resolutely and determinedly, exploiting the memory of the Boston Massacre for that purpose. The irony of the whole thing was the same day that the five people were killed in Boston, that was the day that back in Parliament in England, they got rid of the hated Townsend duties. Parliament backed down again. Champagne Charlie Townsend lay dead. He was no longer Chancellor of the Exchequer. He died of the flu at age 41 and was buried in a fancy and colorful suit of clothes. And now there was the sense by the King and his new minister, Chief Minister, Lord North, that trying to squeeze the colonies for money simply wasn't worth it. So what they did was said, okay, we're going to get rid of all of the Townsend duties except one, the duty on tea. But that led to more fateful footsteps in the direction of revolution and independence.
To purchase this show, go to MedvedStore.com or call 855-880-7206. That's 855-880-7206. MedvedStore.com.
This is Michael Medved for Townhall.com. A new analysis from the Harvard School of Public Health reports on a powerful pattern of behavior that produces substantial benefits in terms of increased longevity, enhanced physical and emotional well-being, and especially greater marital stability, confirming many other previous studies. Professor Tyler J. Vanderweel shows that those who attend religious services regularly suffer much lower rates of early mortality, depression, and divorce, reporting higher levels of marital and personal satisfaction. He doesn't speculate about the supernatural efficacy of prayer, but Vanderweel's research does cite the communal support provided by religious institutions and the impact of faith-based teachings in encouraging us to value the welfare of others. In this holiday season, when even the unchurched like to show up for services, the Harvard study shows that public worship can bring benefits during the rest of the year as well. I'm Michael Medved.
Hey, this is Rockstar Greg with the Michael Medved Show. Thanks for listening to the special history broadcast. If you want even more content from Michael Medved, go to our website, michaelmedved.com, and consider becoming a Medhead. There's so much content available. The 3-hour daily broadcast, commercial-free, hundreds of commentaries, 2 new podcasts, and lots more. It's all at michaelmedved.com. Click on the Medhead subscription and become a member. Thanks for listening in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you could donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-785-9618. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It will be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car, and as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now, 1-800-785-9618. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-785-9618. That's 1-800-785-9618.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer, it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer, Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer, excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.